Tameside Link. Report of the discharge procedure from the mental wards at Tameside Hospital, March 2013. Describing issues. When Tameside Local Involvement Network, the Link, was set up in early 2009, a survey of the local population was undertaken. This asked people to say how well they thought a whole range of local health and adult social care services were performing, and to suggest priority areas for the Link to look at. Some 688 completed surveys were received. 17% of people asked rated mental health services as being poor. In September 2010, Tameside Link attended the Disability Network Conference hosted by Tameside Council. During this event, the workshop attended by Tameside Link highlighted the discharge procedure from the mental health wards at Tameside Hospital a problem, as did the mental health working group that had been developed by Tameside Link. As a result of this, the Link board felt that discharges from one of the adults of working age mental health wards, not dementia, at Tameside Hospital should be investigated as one of its work areas, and that if appropriate, recommendations should be made based on its findings. This report contains those findings and recommendations that are provided. The Link exists to help local people in Tameside to understand and make their voices heard in the planning, management and delivery of health and adult social care services. Established in 2008, the Link boasts a membership of over 900 local people and more than 80 local voluntary and community groups. Its work is governed by an independent board whose members are elected by the Link's membership. The Link is supported by a small staff team and hosted by Community and Voluntary Action Tameside, CVAT, the lead organisation delivering excellent services supporting voluntary, community and faith groups and volunteers in the borough of Tameside. The Link established a mental health working group in 2009 to look at the discharge procedure from the mental health wards at Tameside Hospital and dealing with challenging behaviour on those same wards. In 2012, the Mental Health Working Group developed a list of questions that they wanted people who had recently been discharged from one of the mental health wards at Tameside Hospital to answer. It was also agreed that these interviews would take place on a one-to-one basis with trained volunteers. 5 volunteers took part in the training, which took place in the second quarter of 2012. Tameside Link contacted all the services that provided support for people with mental health problems in the Tameside community and visited Ward 35 and Ward 36 at Tameside Hospital. The interviews took place between July 2012 and December 2012. There are a small number of interviews due to the nature of the service. This report is about illustrating patient experiences rather than providing statistical data. A Link working group was established. This project has been overseen by a working group made up of the Link's membership. There are 8 Link members on the working group, which is also attended by representatives of the Link's elected board. Its role has been to identify whether the support people receive on discharge from a mental health ward in Tameside meets both their needs and expectations, to identify how well Pennine Cares Hospital discharge protocol is routinely implemented, and whether it covers all the elements that patient carers expect it to make recommendations for improvement of the discharge protocol if required, and to assess what differences these make to people's experience of care. This group is supported by members of the Link staff team, who have also undertaken the majority of the work between working group meetings. The mental health discharge had got key issues. 6 people were interviewed. Stays in hospitals ranged from 1 week to 12 months. People were discharged from September 2011 to November 2012. Before there was any discharge, people had mixed experiences before discharge. About half said they had no involvement in the discharge planning process. 3 to 6 interviewees said that no discussion took place. Redischarge process. One patient said they were told on the day of discharge. Two patients said they were told the day before discharge. One patient said discharge was discussed on the third or fourth week. One patient said they had to wait until the doctors had applied to the Ministry of Justice. One patient felt as though he was being pushed through the door. 3 to 6 interviewees said they didn't think they were well enough for discharge. During the discharge process, all the patients said they received their belongings on discharge, and 2 of the interviewees had their benefits sorted before they left the ward. The negative comments outweigh any positive comments, with people saying they were given no information on discharge, and they also said that their family and friends were not informed when they were discharged. 2 to 6 interviewees said that they were given no information re-discharge. One interviewee said that nobody supported him on discharge, apart from his brother-in-law. One interviewee told us that he felt like he was on an assembly line and not treated like a human being. One interviewee said that nobody spoke to her before she left the ward. One interviewee didn't have anywhere to live when he left the ward. He stopped in a hotel for a couple of nights. He did refer himself to Rochdale Alcohol and Drug Service, who have helped him access sheltered accommodation. He does now feel supported. 2 to 6 interviewees said they had their benefits sorted before leaving the ward. One interviewee did not want to return to his flat, so his daughter asked his partner if he could live with her until his own housing had been dealt with. He is still living with his partner. All interviewees said they received all of their belongings when they left the hospital. 3 to 6 interviewees said they were not asked how they were going to get home. Of these, 2 called for a taxi and 1 interviewee caught the bus home. 3 to 6 interviewees said that no friend, family was informed of their discharge. 4 to 6 interviewees said they didn't see any discharge forms, and 2 didn't answer the question. After discharge, although 5 of the interviewees said they had received support from their GPs when leaving hospital, 5 patients said they felt anxious and lonely when returning home. 2 of the patients said they did not feel able to take care of themselves or their home. 3 of the people said their care did not meet their needs or expectations. Only 1 person said their expectations were met. Support since leaving hospital: GP5, CPN3, Other 6. 5 interviewees said they felt anxious, lonely when they left hospital, and 1 person said he had plenty of time to settle back into being at home because of the staggered return to home. 3 interviewees said they had outpatient appointments arranged. 5 to 6 interviewees said they hadn't seen the Keeping Well leaflet. 1 person had seen it. 2 to 6 said they were not able to take care of themselves when they moved back into the community. 1 interviewee said the house was a mess and she wasn't taking care of her personal hygiene. 3 people said if an appointment with the psychiatrist gets missed, cancelled, it gets rearranged for another day. 2 people said they never received an appointment with a psychiatrist. 1 person said a meeting with the psychiatrist had never been missed, cancelled. 3 people said the support that they received on discharge from the mental health ward didn't meet their needs, expectations. Reasons given were patients said there was no diagnosis received, no medication received on discharge, no follow-up appointment received, nowhere to live on leaving ward, no family involvement, had no money. Patients said that communication was lacking between hospital and community teams. More warning should have been given on discharge. Information, including leaflets, telephone numbers and support, should have been offered. Patients said they have received no extra support from anybody since being discharged from hospital. 1 person said that it did meet their needs, expectations. 1 person said they didn't have any expectations. 1 person didn't answer. Comments from included: a patient said that a hospital bathroom was found to have paper towels bunging up the toilets with overflowing mess. Hospital bathrooms with patients' clothes thrown on the floor, and a row when patient asked to move these. The mental wards didn't have enough bath hand towels. patients were asked to dry themselves with bedding sheets. The only one payphone had repairs and was ignored and out of service for ages. There was also no proper reporting procedure for stolen items on mental ward. It was asked, and to be perhaps provided, that mental wards and community services need to be more accountable and that greater say from families and also patients with their own support and care is wanted. One interviewee felt as though his treatment was inhumane. Some of the staff were excellent, but overall the atmosphere was very controlling. You were there to be fixed like a machine. There were petty rules that the patients had to adhere to that wouldn't be a regime with a normal healthy home. The patients also said, "He is a human being and should not have been treated badly." One interviewee took his own medication with him when he got admitted into hospital. These included inhalers and medication for his disabilities. All the medications he took onto the ward are clearly marked with how much and how often they need to be taken. He said he was given the medication at the wrong time and sometimes the wrong amounts. This made him more anxious. He wasn't ward-based, in other words detained, and then ended up absconding to buy cigarettes due to his rise in his anxiety levels. He thought the nurses were trying to drug him. He did say that he did learn a lot on the ward during his one-to-one sessions, but he still didn't think there are enough people on the ward to talk to. One interviewee said no basic art therapy was offered, and no life skills occupational therapy was also not offered on the ward. The patient explained that the care plan meetings didn't allow her to speak up for herself. In fact, the medical team looked angry that she did speak up for herself. One interviewee thought that most of the staff were professional, though had some qualifications and possibly stereotyped people. He didn't feel as though the staff were sympathetic or empathic. He felt as though the staff were treating him as though he was stupid and often spoke to him like he was a child. He felt as though they were on some kind of power trip, like they were unkind prison officers. One interviewee said that they looked after him. He got fed, the occupational therapy was good, he made a poster and did a painting. Ideas and comments on how to improve the discharge process were the majority of patients thought that more communication was needed, both whilst in hospital and with support services once patient had been discharged. People with healthy disposition to talk to on the ward and later providing living benefits. Greater linked support from all involved in treatment from the hospital through to the community teams is needed. Information was needed about the support services that are available in the community, if this is provided. A suggestion was to provide a care support emergency telephone number that would be most useful, and it to be operational 24 hours a day and for 7 days a week. A revised automatic action plan would be wise and caring, with asking the patient who could have to travel a distance if had the means to go home, making sure of having a free bus pass or money for a taxi, or if these weren't available, a supportive relative if route wasn't provided via traditional public transport. A patient said the care plan meetings weren't interactive with greater say. The psychiatrist should have spoken concerning the steps for discharge and also provide an action plan for the safe release of the patient's possessions and drugs to be taken, with perhaps a website link or document concerning these. Otherwise, it'd mean waiting for medical staff to open multi-doors with keys and then having to wait for a telephone message to then be asked for collecting drugs from the dispensary and a possible wait at the dispensary. An idea was to somehow provide this without these difficulties, possibly with support of a drug clinical room and shelves with name labels. An idea was for this to be provided with monitored volunteers or medical staff. Local area support provided with computers or mobile phone internet handsets with clear and helpful design for mental health support available in the community would very much practically great. Recommendations made by service users and working groups provided some idea of the issues, these being some patients whom are in hospital for significant amounts of time find that the benefits that a patient is entitled to reduced. The secondary with this is that it would then said to be affecting home housing issues. A recommendation was that to ensure all patients are given the opportunity to speak to a welfare rights advisor or housing options when their benefits change and before being discharged from hospital. This practical support could be provided from hospital providers and commissioners. Patients that don't get any support with some home care issues because of being unable to provide this for themselves should have some help from greater communication with psychiatric team treatment and community help. Somewhat better monitoring was also asked if patient is unable to take care of some health or home care issues and that this could be provided from community service providers and commissioners. If a patient is detained, then a telephone call should be made with family or carers to explain issues and then give support information at the time of discharge. This could be provided from hospital providers or commissioners. Patients said these admin issues are beyond their own control. Comments from the working group include, if it is the first time that somebody has been admitted onto the ward, it is particularly important to get the discharge procedure right and put support in place for patients once they move into the community. This is about changing patterns of behaviour. If the revolving door scenario is to stop, this could be greater knowledge of drugs that have to be taken, a possible increase with money support to cope with personal health care, such as dental care or purchase of inexpensive medical monitoring kit to aid health, or making sure home has some clear terms, insurance and protection with home security if this is an issue. Other money help could be to pay for a car and associated costs. If a driving license was returned from psychiatrist and community mental health teams, a college course with training and certificates or diploma would be most useful if connected to paid employment. If the employment wage was greater than benefits, this would then provide for expanding life help, such as paying for an expensive holiday or newer car by possibly forwarding money to support a relative or worthwhile charity. A greater practical idea with a patient's lives would be most useful if there was issues with living skills training. Advocacy that was contactable possibly 24 hours a day and 7 days a week with clear and well thought out admin issues with greatly practical help or referral for others to help would be most helpful. If people feel ill again after discharge, there should be a much greater idea with why these issues have occurred. If there was perhaps a possibility that the home address was dysfunctional, or there was tragedy issues such as loss of a loved one or business failure, then it'd be hoped that this would be supported with a much more healthy environment. For example, research to find out why these issues had occurred and sensible help. Secondary help could be provided from advocacy, with a link to other support help that was clear and well thought out admin issues with greatly practical help. If there was no other option, then a detainment to a mental ward would be the issue. Observations from the working group included continuity of relations with support worker is needed. Some people build up a relationship with their support worker and spend time telling their stories and getting to know each other and building trust. A new support worker has to start all over again, and this takes time and can cause unnecessary anxiety for the service user. Some people may receive short-term support. Some people may receive short-term support when they have been discharged from hospital. But how do people access long-term support? How do we make sure that people have suitable homes and relationships? Housing support. How do we make sure that people have somewhere to live? How do we ensure that for people living in rented accommodation go back to their home and that the house is habitable and that maintenance issues are dealt with? Registered social landlords could offer more support for people with mental health problems. Tameside Link does recognise that there may already be systems and processes in place which aim to address one or more of the issues raised in this report. Tameside Link does think it is important that patients understand the information and support they have been given. Therefore, we feel that checks should be in place in order to ensure that the patient understands what is being said and achieved. Sections of this report were revised to aid greater readability and idea from patient who attended a discussion to do with this research. NB. If the Tameside Link 2013 unedited report is wanted, please then send a message. Thank you.